Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Parma podcast. I am James Prescott, your host. Welcome to the show. Really great to have you here again. And today we have another new guest. I'm really excited about this one, as always. I love having new guests on the show. Today is no different. It's another friend that I've met on Twitter in the last few months, and I'm really excited to introduce him to you. Atlas Talos, welcome to the show.
Thank you, James. Now, I hope that you're far more excited to have me on than any of your previous guests, because that's how cool I am, and that's how excited you should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, given what you do, you know, that is a pretty
good thing. I'm a pretty big deal. Pretty big deal. Not to toot my own horn.
Yeah. Well, those New York Times bestselling authors. Yeah. Just not remotely as cool as somebody who draws t-shirts for Marvel.
I do silly doodles, the silliest of doodles. And you're pretty lucky to have me, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we are. all joking aside, I think I'm glad you're here. As you already have heard, Atlas is an artist, and we're going to talk about that a bit more hear his story today. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So I'm a 39-year-old freelance illustrator and designer from Portland, Oregon, the city that Trump supporters would have you believe is currently on fire and overrun with LGBT, trans, Antifa super soldiers. And, somehow I make my way through the wastelands to do my silly drawings. It's tough. It's tough. And I pride myself on always being growing as a person. And trying to learn new things and just continually be the best version of myself. And then I try and use my arts as a way to express the things that I love and the things that I've learned. And I've met a lot of really cool people with it and through Twitter, just like yourself. It's been really great getting to know you a little bit, and I'm really looking forward to the chance to sit down and talk with you today.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And I'm excited to share your story with people because you've got a really great story to share.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone who listens to the show regularly knows that we love sharing stories here. Especially people who've not told their story before, I think I love to do that and to give people the chance to share their story with the world. It's a great thing. So yeah, Atlas, tell us your story.
Absolutely. So for my story, I was raised in a very nondescript, very unremarkable, just white suburban Christian household in the suburbs of Portland. My parents had me young, and they did their best with the information that they had. I was raised fairly Christian, not as Christian as some people that I know, but still, there are weird restrictions in place. Like, I couldn't watch The Simpsons. I couldn't consume certain types of media, but then my folks would let me watch movies with, lots of violence and stuff in them. So just that kind of classic weird, what are the standards here kind of thing.
Yeah.
My parents have told me on multiple occasions that they really prided themselves on letting us have a childhood, which to them meant protecting us from the mean, nasty outside world. And having never raised a child myself, I guess I admired that growing up, because I did. I had a pretty decent childhood. I played with friends, and I had video games I could play. And, I had my Sunday school friends, and my faith in the big guy, and that was a whole thing. But then I was one of those talented and gifted kids who knew enough to be dangerous, but quote unquote was lazy and didn't have the work ethic to actually go anywhere with it. as an aside, turns out I had undiagnosed ADHD and depression. Didn't find that out until I was well into my 30s. But, you know, someone I would ask questions about scripture and God and things like that usually got kind of brushed under the table. And I think it was around 15, 16 years old that I realized that this isn't really for me. I think this might be a load of bullshit. And so I started pulling away from the church, and that caused, you know, the predictable tension with my parents, who define themselves entirely through their faith. But I graduated high school and I stayed at home far longer than most kids my age did. I was always a late bloomer that way. So yeah. I was living at home and just working at a big box store called Fred Meyer, here in the Northwest. It's basically Walmart, but 10% more upscale. and so I was just kind of spinning my wheels, and I started in the graphic design program at community college after I graduated high school, and realized without any compunction that I do not do well in a school setting. I didn't even understand the distinction between graphic design and illustration, which illustration is my passion. I love to draw. I've always loved to draw. Graphic design is about designing logos and designing packaging, and designing advertising, and making sure that, you know, we had a teacher that we presented a piece, she would break out a ruler and make sure that all of our margins were exactly precise all around the sides. And that the kerning, which is the spacing between letters in the text you'd be laying out, was exactly equal. And that kind of minutia, A, drove me nuts, and B, was not stimulating to me in the slightest. I learned a ton, but I also found myself in some pretty serious suicidal ideation and hooked on caffeine pills. And it became very clear to me less than a year into that program that it wasn't going to work out. So I wound up dropping out of my graphic design program when I was 18 and kind of spinning my wheels at community college for several years after that. I took every life drawing course they had, every creative writing course that they had, even though I'm still not a very good writer. But I didn't really have a direction. I didn't work on homework still outside of class. My time was spent on, you know, tabletop gaming and, you know, flirting with girls on the internet. But then one day when I was 23 years old, so I'd been out of high school for 5 years, I just woke up one day and something hit me. I was like, I got to get out. I can't do it anymore. I got to get out. So I went to my mom, who works for a school district in HR, and I was like, I want to go back to school. I want to go to school for an actual program that will let me use my art as a career. Game design, animation, something. Let's figure it out. So she went and did some research. And she came back and said, have you ever heard of ITT, Technical Institute? And I was like, no, what is that? As an aside for our listeners, ITT, Technical Institute was an extremely predatory private university that has since been censured by the U.S. government and shut down for defrauding students and making promises that they could not adhere to. So that's the setup for the story for anybody who doesn't know. But I, a bright-eyed young artist who had dreams of working for Disney or Pixar one day, I went to their campus and got the full court press. Their recruiter person, you know, took me through and showed me classrooms full of slick cutting edge computers and drawing tablets, and told me all about how their instructors worked in the industry so they could let you know exactly what's happening right on the cutting edge. And then they had this career placement department that once you've graduated from ITT with your degree, they're going to help you get a job in the field that you've chosen. I was like, wow, what a great idea. Every school should do this. What a great decision I'm making. And then we sat down and she's like, so we're an accredited university, but because we're a private university, we don't qualify for government loans. So you will need to sign a private loan. And she was explaining the details of that, but all I was staring at was the flyer that said that you can add the cost of a new Dell laptop to your student loans. Whoa, I need a laptop. I can use that to make drawings on. So
yeah,
I signed on the dotted line for some crazy interest rate. And I started my career at ITT Technical Institute, the university that has commercials during the daytime when you're watching Judge Wapner, you know?
Yeah.
Wapner was a TV judge from the 1980s. That's for all of our young listeners. 20th century. Don't worry about it. And it was very clear, like immediately in starting there, that they had misrepresented some things to me. Like, it was clear that many of the instructors were learning this material for the first time alongside us, and that I knew as much as my instructors in some cases. There was one course called Instructional Design, which has design in the title, which is why I think they decided to add it to the curriculum. And probably they got the textbooks at a bulk discount. But the curriculum itself was about designing a curriculum for like training material, like corporate training or, you know, educational courses.
Okay.
And so a room of hungover artists who want to go and work for Nintendo or, you know, make the next Homestar Runner are sitting there like, what the fuck is this? What are you teaching us exactly? And the instructor would come into class, say a terse hello, and then start reading word for word from the textbook. And like no pauses, no like, does anybody have any questions? She'd just be reading. And we'd be reading along and somebody would get brave and they'd raise their hand and be like, hey, could you explain this part of this text that we don't understand in any way? And she would stare at them, terrified, for a half second, then go right back to reading. And we'd all look around the room like, did that just fucking happen? Did I witness that? And
you can't make that up, can you?
No, I don't think you can. So at that point, it became clear that I have made a mistake. I have moved out of my parents' house, like 45 minutes away, living on my own for the first time with a couple of dudes I met on Craigslist. Craigslist was the classified pages of the day. Again, early 21st century. Mm. Our Gen Z listeners have no idea. It was the Wild West. I made a colossal mistake and I wound up dropping out of ITT after two terms and like five figures worth of debt. In that time, I learned like two tricks in Photoshop that I still use to this day that I could have learned in an afternoon watching YouTube tutorials. And yeah, it was a big mistake and not my mom's fault. Mom did her best. She didn't know either, but it still happened. But the silver lining of this story is that because I moved out of suburbia and I moved into the city, I was actually exposed to people who were not like me for the first time in my life. So people that weren't just conservative, white, suburban people, I realized I hadn't met my first gay man until I started working in Portland. I realized I didn't really have any friends that were people of color before then. I had never really spoken to someone who actually had leftist politics. And it became quickly clear to me when we would talk about things going on in the real world that almost all of my personal philosophies were just spoon-fed to me by my parents, and I never questioned them ever.
Wow.
My parents are the smartest people that I knew. So why would I ever question what they have to say? They know everything. My dad is a certified old genius. Never mind that he drives a bus for a living. My mom is a beautiful angel and a saint. And of course they prepared me as best they could for the real world. Yeah, about that. So at that point, now, I'm not bad-mouthing my parents. they did the best they could with the information they had. They did what they thought was right. But I could not have been more woefully unprepared for the world that was out there than with the way that they raised me. And so over the next many years, I started learning and challenging myself and challenging my preconceived notions and trying to grow and learned very quickly to regret that I voted for George W. Bush twice when I first learned, or when I was first old enough to vote. Regretting the flippant tone that I would take talking about things like abortion and, you know, racism, gun control. Just those classic conservative talking points that when they're uttered in the presence of other conservatives, it's never with malice aforethought. Like, they're never like hateful when they discuss these things. They talk about it like it's the most natural, obvious thing in the world. They love to tell themselves that they're the only ones that have any quote unquote common sense, and that, you know, those coastal elites, leftist yahoos, are, you know, they're crazy, they're out of their minds, they're not real Americans, blah, blah, fucking whatever. But like, once I actually stopped and started analyzing the worldview that I had been passed down, I realized, A, that it holds up under like no scrutiny at all. And B, that it has a complete callous disregard for the well-being of anybody who isn't like that, you know, white, middle-class, suburban, cishet.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's disheartening to figure that out about people that you worship the ground that they walked on. And I did. Like, I thought my parents were just aspirational people, and what they were is just a product of decades and centuries of a white supremacist society and the programming that we all are raised with, you know, baseball and apple pie and patriotism. When just around the corner, just outside your door, your fellow Americans, your brothers are suffering and they're under constant assault. And at every turn, the people in power are looking to exploit and dominate them so they can be useful cogs in a system that keeps them down. And it's illuminating. And then for a while, I would go on, I don't want to say pointless crusades, but attempts that were doomed to fail to try and help my parents see what I had learned, which is that the world is infinitely more complicated than they like to acknowledge, and that people deserve more grace and more consideration than we give them. When I was growing up, my father was my best friend, and he introduced me to Dungeons and Dragons, which I still play today. We learned how to play Magic the Gathering together. We played video games together. When I was in seventh grade, maybe eighth grade, he snuck me out of school telling the office that I had a dentist appointment, but he was actually taking me to the theater to go see The Empire Strikes Back re-release that came out that year.
Oh, wow.
And then when that movie was over, he snuck me into the Return of the Jedi screening that was happening a little bit later. We That's just refilled our popcorn and just waltzed right into the theater back when you could do that kind of thing. And I had to reconcile that the man who did those things for me could also be the same man who believed that systemic racism wasn't a thing and that people being poor is their own fault, and that the earth is 5,000 years old, and that either dinosaur fossils were placed here by God to test our faith, or maybe prehistoric man rode them to work every day, like on the Flintstones. I don't know. The story changed. And
right. Okay.
And after a while, I really had to accept that my own father, who was so instrumental in my own life, was someone with whom I didn't actually share any values. And
tough, isn't it? It's a grief process in a way. When
it really is, and it's an ongoing one.
Yeah.
The final straw was a few years back. He said some very cruel and judgmental and condescending things to me and to my ex-wife about our relationship. And when I called him on it, he just doubled down. And at that point, I was like, you know what? You know, like I said, we don't share any values. You clearly think so little of me that you would say these horrible things to me and the person, and my partner. I think we're just done. And so since that time, I just don't associate with him anymore. And that's tough on my mother, and it's very tough on me, but it's also part of this journey that I'm on where I need to be my truest self. And I had to just kind of take stock of this and be like, look, if you didn't raise me, I would never choose to spend time with you, ever.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't bring me peace, if you don't enrich my life, why am I spending time on this? All the credit in the world to what you did. You were the best father you could be, but our life is vanishingly short, and I just am not so married to traditional family roles that I will continue to subject myself to someone who makes me feel worse about myself and embarrasses me and refuses to meet me on my level in any way.
Yeah. Well, that's a courageous decision. Yeah. And it's one that a lot of people who do the kind of, you know, what is termed deconstruction,
yes,
kind of personal transformation journey, the
yes,
all of that often experience, because there's been a lot of stories on this podcast people have shared where they've had that struggle with parents and had to leave them behind, it is sad. It's a traumatic experience, and but at the same time, like you say, it's absolutely necessary for our self care and to take care to protect ourselves. And I'm quite fortunate, you know, with my dad who's still alive, that I have a good relationship with him, and I had a good relationship with my mother. But I know other people are not so lucky.
Yeah, and for a while I really was very guilty about it, but I had to kind of accept and make myself understand that it's as much his choice as mine. You know, I have given him every opportunity to understand my viewpoints, to meet me on my level, to grow beyond the person that he decided he was at 20 years old and then never challenged again. You know, I don't have children. I made the decision fairly early on that I didn't want children. I love children, but it's just not for me. And so I've been able to really focus on myself and continuing to grow and learn and understand the world. And I think that at some point along the line, my father just decided that he wasn't interested in that anymore. He preferred to be right in his own mind rather than being uncomfortable and continuing to grow. And that's not energy that I need to be around. It doesn't benefit me at all. And it's often like talking to a brick wall. You know, back in 2014, no, 2016, when Colin Kaepernick was kneeling during the national anthem and he became a lightning rod for criticism, he fell into all the classic Fox News talking points. I don't even think he watched Fox News at the time, but he somehow, probably just conservative talk radio, I guess, wound up on the, you know, well, it disrespects the troops and it's all overblown anyway. He's doing it for attention and for money, which is a breathtaking conclusion to come to, because you know how athletes are always throwing away careers in the biggest sports league in their country to make money. That you know, that's what people do.
Yeah.
Sure pops. And like, we would go on these epic Facebook threads where, because I had Mohammed as my friend on Facebook, because I'm a fool, and I would break out all the evidence, because I've been like super involved and focused on Black Lives Matter and police brutality and racial injustice for a long, long time. And I would show him Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Philando Castile, Tamir Rice, all these cases with video footage that shows that police in America are just murdering Black people because they can. And he would just gloss it over. He wouldn't acknowledge it. He would just gloss it over, you know, say things like, the system can't be corrupt because we're all part of the system. And so it was this weird point that I could never quite parse. But he always had some weird, convoluted answer for why it was cool that the people who are supposed to be protecting us are killing our brothers and sisters. And after a while, like, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I realized that I had grown beyond my father. I had grown to be more mature and a better citizen. And my focus in life was so far removed from his that it just didn't work anymore. And so, like you said, it's very traumatic. But it was a part of me becoming the person that I wanted to be. And so as a result, I've really tried to take my art and use it to convey the things that I see about the world, and try and put them out there, and just put something out there that maybe will resonate with someone. And I've been lucky enough that it's had some impact. It's always hard to get your voice out there now that the internet is so siloed and the algorithm rules everything. And people don't really want to hear from a cis white boy trying to educate them about racial injustice, I think. But for me, if I can at least articulate the thoughts that I have, you know, I've made comics about George Floyd, about Martin Luther King, about Ferguson, about the things that we have going on here in Portland. You know, I've been a part of not as many protests as I would have liked, but I definitely marched on the ICE detention facility that was here in Portland when the news about family separations was coming out. And just the things that I witnessed of poor people coming together for cooperative action against a corrupt government, it's breathtaking, it's inspiring. And whatever I can do to try and convey that level of message to people, I really want to try. And then when I don't have a big bully pulpit like that to stand on, then I like to draw my favorite Star Wars and Marvel characters. And I'm still very invested in those fictional universes.
Absolutely.
But I know you are too.
Yeah. And,
Mr. Kal-El, and
yes, from my other podcast, yeah,
absolutely, with our friend Emma. I'm very, very, very happy that y'all are getting that project off the ground. But then getting involved in those communities kind of brings you back to that same kind of backwards regressive attitude that so many people in fandom have. And when I say people, unfortunately, I'm usually referring to cishet white men. And the sheer toxicity that you see in the fandoms for these enormous...
Yeah, I've seen it.
It's so disheartening.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah,
it's so bad, and it makes me so uncomfortable associating with it, because these films, these comics, the games, just these properties are like the most amazingly crafted escapism that I believe the world's ever seen. Like, for all of their faults, and corporate Disney has so many faults, the one thing they're amazing at is giving exceptionally talented people boatloads of money and just telling them, go make something cool.
Yeah.
and it's really, it's fantastic to see. Like, I really enjoy it. And, you know, people trying to have conversations like, are superheroes cops? Because, of course, cops are a huge problem in America right now. And I think that kind of discourse misses the point somewhat, because superheroes, for example, are cops, quote unquote, but in a fictional world that runs the way that we've always been told that it should run, where good guys win and strong people protect the weak, and people who do bad things will receive comeuppance for their sins. But the reality of the world that we live in is that none of that's true. That the supervillains don't need costumes and robot suits because they own the world, and they own all of us and all of our lives. And they own the people who are supposed to be policing them, and they own the people that are supposed to be governing and regulating them.
Yeah.
So I think that while it's valuable to ask questions about whether the escapism that we engage in is reflective of the world that we're in, I also think its merit is that it's not reflective of the world that we're in. And it's nice to be able to sit down for a couple of hours and just watch stories where people in colorful costumes can problem solve and use their abilities to solve big problems.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it, isn't it? It's aspirational. It's hopeful. It's like, this is how it could be if we if we all did what we could do. If we all played a part.
If we all cared about our neighbor as much as ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it is. That's why those stories resonate. I've talked about this on my other podcast. Kryptonian Princess and the Avenger. If you're looking for it, it's on all the podcast platforms. But we talk about movies and these stories and why they matter and why these characters matter. And you're absolutely right. They can give us a bit of hope. That's what I see in my favorite superhero stories and fantasy stories. You know, it's what we can be, what we can do.
Exactly. But the disappointing thing is then, as a member of a community that enjoys this kind of work, seeing other people co-opt those symbols and those properties and those stories to forward hateful agendas is upsetting and disappointing. You know, to see cops wearing Punisher skulls, to see people on 4chan just viciously mocking Brie Larson for her portrayal of Captain Marvel.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. That's really awful.
It's really awful.
Yeah, I see it with because I'm meaning to Superman. I see it with the kind of restore the Snyderverse people. You know, these
this
toxic group of people who, and some of them are kind of genuine and just wanted to see that movie, you know, remade. But but there's an element of that group who are really toxic and abusive and cruel. And and even Zack Snyder himself, I think, had to kind of disown them at one point.
Yeah.
And
not that Zack Snyder is any kind of role model himself, but
no, I'm not saying absolutely not saying that. But you know, it's kind of embarrassing when the person that you're meant to be supporting has to disown you. And it's just this toxic kind of almost fundamentalist way of thinking, like it's like, oh, well, no way, and we're going to abuse anybody with us. And that is not progressive thinking.
It's
not compassionate thinking. It's not even the people that you, the heroes that you're watching on the screen, it's not how they would behave.
Exactly. How do you watch Captain America, who is Chris Evans, his portrayal of Captain America is just breathtaking.
I'll never
get over how good it was. And I am not a patriot. I have a healthy disrespect for my country and its symbol. But him, the way he portrayed that character to embody truly like welcoming and caring and empathetic morals and ideals and a desire to do the right thing as best he could and try and dismantle systems that were going to harm the people they're meant to protect. Like, how you watch that and then bring a Captain America shield to a neo-Nazi rally is...
Yeah. And I actually kind of almost alluded, kind of touched on this in the Falcon and Winter Soldier series when...
Yeah, yes.
You have the white guy who takes on the suit.
Yes. And
he's not even remotely Captain America. Like, he is... He is what these people are. He is, you know, the typical white supremacist male, narcissistic and like, you know, self-involved and like, you know, all that. And so they were aware of that. I love how they did that, actually, how they kind of reflected that in a way, like, you know.
Me too.
And that series, I actually enjoyed that series more than a lot of people did. So
I love that series. I really did. And, you know, it, the production was a bit stilted, so they had to drop some storylines, but so many of the social points that they hit on were so powerful and so well done. And it makes complete sense that a black man was the showrunner and the head writer, and that the black man was the main character. And it just, there was so much care and so much passion in the message you're trying to convey, and I really loved it.
Yeah, and this is why I'm looking forward to the Ta-Nehisi Coates Superman.
Yes. I didn't realize Ta-Nehisi was doing a Superman comic. Oh, that's great.
He's doing the movie. Oh. He's writing a movie. And it's being produced by J.J. Abrams. And they're trying to find a good director, I think, at the moment.
Don't say J.J. Abrams.
No, he's not directing. Let's not do that. No, he's not directing it. He'll be a black director.
Okay, excellent.
And it's going to be a black Superman. So I'm really intrigued to see what they do with that.
Absolutely.
How they could use Superman as a symbol of standing against the system, standing against social injustice, standing against white supremacy, Superman against the police, you know, essentially, you know, Superman's enemy is a billionaire who wants to be president. Right.
Yes.
So there's just so much there that's relevant.
It's all there.
I mean, I'm really, and the greatest superhero of all being played by a black man would be Yeah. Amazing. So
and it's, yeah.
I really want that. I'm really hopeful for that and hope it goes ahead. So, yeah.
I'll be there day one for that. That sounds outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about time we had a Superman movie.
And then when I think about, you know, we're talking about all these regressive people who are so prominent, or just maybe not prominent, but loud in geek spaces. I can't help but come back to the fact that the alt-right literally was formed on 4chan message boards, you know, where people would go and bullshit about movies and comics, and then somehow they were infiltrated by Nazis. And so many of these just disenfranchised white men decided to just turn off their empathy entirely and just circle the wagons against the rest of the world, blaming them for whatever things were wrong in their life when they're the things that are wrong in their life.
Mm. And yeah, it's incredible really how the things like that just start from small things and then turn into something else completely.
Yeah. And those ideologies just are pervasive then through the culture, and it, I don't know how to take it on. I don't know how to combat it. I remember when Black Panther came out, and I use Reddit. Reddit is a very problematic website, but I like it. I try and stay toward the parts that are, you know, focused on just stuff that's surface level that I like, and not go into the horrible parts of it, much like Twitter. Whenever someone would bring up Black Panther in Marvel forums, you could set your watch by some white dude coming and tell you how Black Panther was overrated, and you know it didn't deserve all the attention that it got. It's just wokeism gone a cancel culture gone awry, James. And it's so frustrating to see people who are angry because when they were young they felt disenfranchised for liking nerd things, games and comics. Now as adults, deciding to then exclude people from spaces that they already occupy. Like, you're mad because you couldn't get girls in high school because you were a nerd, but now girls want to come join you and be part of the fun, and you want to just shit on them. You know, you didn't like that the jocks in high school were bullies to you, but now we're adults and people finally understand how great these stories are, and you want to just turn around and be shitty to them like they were to you. And I can't understand it. I can't fathom it. And it always just seems to come back to just toxic masculinity. You know, the thing that it's just programmed into us that we don't even think about. That same programming that my parents inadvertently gave me, where you were just raised a certain way and this is who you are and we don't question it, you know. And these dudes, who the only community they have is full of just equally hateful people, they can't even be bothered to do a 5-minute Google search to see that the term toxic masculinity isn't saying all masculinity is toxic. It's saying that you're being done a disservice by your perception of what masculinity is supposed to be. And if people could just open themselves up to the world around them and like actually listen to their neighbors and try and foster a connection with other people, they wouldn't be so disenfranchised. They wouldn't be so cut off from everybody else. And so that's another thing that I try and combat and talk about just in my social media feeds and in my art. And moving forward, projects that I take on, I really want to go after issues like this, you know, of toxic masculinity, of colonialism, of just the ways that we as white people do a disservice to people that we should love and be serving and be standing side by side with, because we're scared. And
absolutely.
Change is scary, and changing yourself is terrifying. And
absolutely.
My life is so so enriched by the decision to break free of what my parents wanted me to be. And opening myself up to people whose focus is love and is supporting others. And I've built my found family very, very intentionally. And I am surrounded by people who are supportive and kind and caring. And we're all neurodivergent and LGBT weirdos, and but we build each other up and help each other grow and help ourselves become the best version of who we are. And that's just so invaluable. And that's so more valuable to me than any religion could be or any, you know, political party could be. It's just trying to be the best version of yourself. And I think that's something that everybody should be aspiring to.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. And I've been finding that community for myself, you know, in the last year or two. And, you know, it is a, when you find authentic community with people who you feel safe with and who love you and who show up for you and listen.
Yes.
That is such a gift, and I'm glad you found that. And
and I'm glad to count you as part of my community, because I think you're a wonderful person, and I really appreciate what you put out into the world and that you give a platform to people who wouldn't have one otherwise. And it's so valuable, and it's something the world needs, and I really appreciate you for that.
Thank you so much. That's so kind.
Not just letting me talk about myself for an hour and a half, which, you know, I'm always happy to do.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Oh, this has been a great episode, Atlas. So where can people find you on social media? And
all of my social channels are now changed to my new name, which is Atlas Talos, A-T-L-A-S-T-A-L-O-S. And I'm most prominent and most active on Twitter. I'm horrible at Instagram, but I'm technically there. I'm not on TikTok, and I'm on Facebook, but I'd rather not be. So find me on Twitter, add me, let's bullshit, let's talk about superheroes.
Yeah,
let's talk about how dumb white people are. Let's do it.
Do it. All right. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it. It's been
thanks so much for having me. I hope we get to do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely have to do it again at some point. Yeah, for sure. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks, lovely people. You're all attractive and cute, and I love you.